When you have great coaches, then after you have great coaches, you get great players. You have a great organization, and you tell them one thing. Just win, baby.
Welcome to another episode of the Just Blog Baby podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Park, and joining me as always is Nick Jeltness, the editor-in-chief of Just Blog Baby. We also have the Colossus of Clout, the Sultan of SWAT, the Titan of Twitter, my man Ryan Lopes.
40s, man.
Ryan, how are you guys doing today?
Man, yeah.
Doing depressed still?
Yeah, hell yeah. Mad depressed.
You know, I feel like this episode might sound like a group therapy session. As bad as it was after we lost Derek Carr, I didn't think it could get worse. But you know, here we are.
Here we are. Yeah, I think I'm with you on the group therapy session. I'm actually myself just laying down on the couch, going to kick my feet up and just talk about all my problems.
Yeah, this is the first. This is the first game this season, man. Where before halftime, man, I cut off the TV, man. I bounced. I had to sit down at a later time, later date, run back the second half, man. Shit was hard, man. It was hard.
It was pretty brutal. I mentioned last week that we were one play away from having Connor Cook as our starting quarterback, and I might have jinxed it because here we are with Connor Cook as our starting quarterback going into Houston. But before we talk about that, let's talk about the rest of the offense first on Sunday and how they performed. We'll start with the run game. It was a rough day for everybody, backs included. Ryan, when the run game was needed to step up, how disappointing was it for them to like put together like such a poor performance?
Yeah, it was. I'm gonna kind of branch off a little bit on this one too. First of all, obviously, huge disappointment. Completely inexcusable on Musgrave's part to throw in the towel so quickly on the run game when you need it now more than ever. Obviously with Derek sidelined. I know there was kind of some back and forth going on Twitter. I know Jack Del Rio in his presser, to some, I guess we can call it, you know, he more or less threw Musgrave under the bus and asked, you know, and said, hey, you know, Murray only had X amount of carries, you know, I would like to know, you know, what happened and why. And I know some fans, you know, kind of took that the wrong way and rightfully so. For the most part, Musgrave has been stellar. The offense has been stellar. So I know that kind of rubbed some fans the wrong way. To me, I was kind of happy to see Del Rio speak up. And I know some people said, you know, you got to kind of keep internal stuff internal and et cetera, et cetera. And the more I got thinking about it, initially I was like, you know, cool, Del Rio putting his foot down, you know, hopefully that changes some things going to Houston, et cetera. And the more I got thinking about it, I kind of thought like, damn, like Del Rio is behind the podium, obviously head coach hat and all that, but he's got to kind of look at his own self and look at his own unit. You know, here he is, a defensive coach. And for the most part throughout the season, defense has been up and down. Now, whether that's a majority on Norton, some on Del Rio, regardless, for me, this is a head coach that is, you know, a defensive minded coach. So that was a bit of a interesting kind of turn to kind of add to going into this playoff game here. So again, a little bit off topic / on topic there, but to answer your question again, huge disappointment and hopefully they get shit right. You know,
the offense only ran the ball 16 times. Did the Raiders not run the ball enough, or is it not that simple? What happened there?
I guess the best way to answer that question is initially, I was pretty upset looking at the box score that the Raiders only had 16 carries, because I think going into the game, everybody was in agreement that, you know, with McGloin being the starter, that we would have to rely heavily on the run game. So, you know, you definitely expected them to get probably twice as many carries as 16, if not more than that. But then I started to think about it and realized that it's not that simple, because pretty much what the Raiders faced, I ran the game back, pretty much what the Raiders faced virtually all game long was 8-man fronts and sometimes even 9 in the box. And, you know, with just 5 offensive linemen, you can throw a tight end in there. I mean, the numbers aren't going to work in your favor of the offense if the team is stacking that many bodies in the box. So they were doing everything they could to make sure that the run game wasn't going to get going. And, I mean, that's exactly what happened. The fact of the matter is that they only had 16 carries, I think probably speaks to that, is that they were averaging 3.4 yards per carry on the day. Without DeAndre Washington's 20-yard gain, that was the longest run the Raiders had, that average actually drops down to 2.4 yards per carry, completely abysmal. So with having 8-9 guys in the box, what do you expect Musgrave to do, just to keep rolling with that, keep facing those 9-man fronts? It was just a matter of the offense simply just being shut down with that Derek Carr is really all it was.
Yeah, it's basically the Broncos challenged, they wanted to challenge McGloin's arm, and it worked. So, but speaking of McGloin's arm, the production of the wide receivers is, heavily dependent on quarterback play. Ryan, what are your thoughts on how the wideouts perform? They seem kind of invisible.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of alluded to it right there, right? It's again, I said it last week leading into the Denver game, the drop off clearly from a player like Derek Carr, who MVP candidate, et cetera, to a player like Matt McGloin, to a player like Connor Cook is enormous. That gap is huge. You're going to see a drop in play across the board, which we did. So to some of us, most of us, that wasn't a surprise. There might have been some people that expected, McGloin to maybe, set the world on fire or whatever. Obviously, some expectations needed to be kind of adjusted or readjusted. as far as the wideouts, man, I'm looking at it right in front of me right here. Crabtree 50 yards, Cooper 39 yards, Roberts 26 yards. Again, I think given the drop off and given who we have under center now, I'm not sure really that we're expecting these big numbers. I was excited to see, Cooper came out today in an interview and said he's going to go into this playoff game demanding the ball, which he said something along the lines of, that's not selfish for great players to demand the football, which I was very happy to see. So hopefully, Cooper's going to, take Derek's absence and try to maybe find some other confidence within himself to really kind of, stick his hand up and try to make some things happen.
Just to add to that real quickly, I just wanted to say that I really didn't have any problem with Crabtree or Cooper's performance. I mean, the numbers don't pop out of the box score, but as Dylan kind of alluded to in the question, I mean, that their production is obviously always going to be directly tied into the performance of the quarterback. Crabtree and Cooper both had 8 targets, and a lot of those were well-earned targets, meaning the ball I don't think was being forced to them. I just saw a lot of the times both Crabtree and Cooper were getting open. I mean, there was a play early in the game where Amari Cooper completely cooked Tlaib, had him beat, would have been an easy touchdown if, McGloin would have delivered the throw, on the money. And there are three or four other throws that McGloin sailed and probably 2 or 3 passes that Connor Cook sailed. So I think Crabtree and Cooper did their job. They were getting open. It's just a matter of the quarterbacks that played weren't able to find them or hit them when they were open.
I'm gonna call a timeout real quick here. Let's talk about Tlaib's chain snatch on Crabtree for a second. Now, I don't like to be a snitch, but man, that was some petty ex-girlfriend side chick behavior. First of all, how was that not a penalty? You know what I mean? Like, what? I know the ref saw that. Like, how could you have not seen that?
Yeah, it happened right in front of the referee, right in front of him, and. Yeah, I mean, I really don't even know what to say about it. It was the craziest, one of the crazier things I think I've seen happen in a game. I mean, Tlaib, deliberately, that's what his goal was. I mean, he even said as much after the game that he told Crabtree he was going to rip his chain off just because it annoyed him. pretty ridiculous for him to have to take it there. I mean, I don't know if maybe Crabtree was in his head, and I think subsequently, I think maybe it flipped into Tlaib's favor after that because Crabtree was trying to kind of get him to push him and draw a penalty and didn't retaliate. But yeah, I'm definitely excited for the next time these two meet up, which definitely we'll see next year. It'll be fun.
I just want to add, primetime Ryan is kind of the head honcho, man, the de facto leader of the Michael Crabtree chain gang, on Twitter. So as soon as that should happen, man, I reached for my phone as quick as I've ever reached for my phone. And I said, I gotta have Ryan's reaction to this. And my man certainly didn't disappoint. He was on Twitter asking everyone for this dude's whereabouts and where he lays his head and shit. So,
all right. So back to more depressing topics. So it's two games in a row now that a quarterback for the Oakland Raiders has been injured. It might be easy to point fingers at the offensive line. Ryan, what do you think's going on here? Is it just bad luck?
I guess Derek, I guess we kind of undervalue maybe what Derek's doing in the pocket as far as stepping up and kind of working around any pressure. And again, to be very clear, there's been very limited pressure compared to other quarterbacks throughout the National Football League. You know, this offensive line has played, you know, top notch football from week one. So I guess it's probably a combination of, you know, Derek just being obviously the better quarterback and being more mindful, better pocket presence. And then, you know, just the way things have been going for this franchise as of late, you probably mix in a little bit of bad luck between the pinky, then the fibula, and now obviously the second string quarterback getting knocked out too. So it is what it is, man.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I definitely think it's just, I mean, it definitely is bad luck and really nothing more than that. One of the Raiders PR guys tweeted out that the offensive line only allowed 18 sacks on the season, which is the lowest in the NFL and the lowest that the Raiders have recorded since the stat became official in 1982. I mean, so these guys were phenomenal week in and week out. It was just a matter of one bad luck sack that Penn gave up because he slipped, that Derek ended up getting hurt on. And then, as Ryan pointed out, I think a lot of it probably has to do with McGoin getting injured, with Derek, how you pointed out that he just got, you know, better pocket maneuverability than McGoin does. I think maybe on that particular play, that's probably a play where Derek maybe steps left, steps right, whereas McGoin, I mean, he just sits there and takes that shot and gets driven into the ground. So, yeah, just bad luck, I think, back-to-back weeks in that regard and nothing more than that.
Yeah, I mean, we've mentioned it a few times earlier this season in the podcast. You know, as a Raiders fan, you're kind of just waiting for the wheels to fall off. And, you know, we went through the entire season. It was an impeccable season. It was better than anyone could have hoped for. And here we are a week before the playoffs, and it's a complete nightmare. But even then, you know, headed into the game, optimism took over. You know, Raider Nation is that fan base who, you know, that always stays optimistic. They kind of talk themselves into liking McGloin or believing in McGloin, and myself included. And then the game started, and that faith evaporated very quickly. You know, like, I don't know if it's too soon, but just like George Michael's, that faith was gone.
Here we go.
So... But what went wrong for McGloin? Nick, you go first.
I think the better question might be what didn't go wrong for McGloin, because that's really the kind of day it was for him. And pretty much exactly like you said, I mean, a lot of the fan base really started to talk themselves into McGloin, probably even more so than they should have, which you can't fault them for. I mean, I'm not going to fault anyone for further optimism, but I think that's really all it was. It just was optimism. You know, talking yourself into, yeah, we don't have Derek Carr, but we'll still be fine, I think was maybe nice to say, but I mean, this is the NFL. It doesn't work that simply. Matt McGloin, he's been a preseason Hall of Famer, but as I tweeted out early in the game when he started struggling, I mean, this ain't the preseason. He very, very clearly had the yips. It looked like he was completely shook. He was sailing passes, looking like a deer in headlights out there, just completely lost. And for a guy who's been in the system since 2013, been with the team, been with the players, I mean, that was, I think, really, really disappointing for him to just have that bad of a game. I mean, what did he end up having? It was like 6 for 11 for like 21 yards or something like that. Just a complete disaster. So, yeah, that faith that evaporated.
That's such a Matt McGloin box score.
Completely, yeah. So that faith that Raider Nation had coming into the game went south right away. I ran a poll after the game. who would you rather see, McGloin or Cook, start? And with over 1,500 votes, 88% of people voted for Connor Cook. So just as quickly as Raider Nation bought into McGloin, they turned on him even faster. So that's just the kind of day it was.
I know the homie on Twitter, Eric Stoner, a.k.a. Bo Jackson, tweeted out something after the game along the lines of, you know, all Matt McGloin had to do was play competent football for like three quarters or a better part of three quarters. And he probably would have been looking at a cool like $7-8 million over the offseason. So obviously came out completely flat. Of course he got hurt, but even prior to the injury, man, there was that one series, I think Nick, you talked about it before, where he missed Cooper High on a clear touchdown. And two passes before that, he missed his wide out high. It was three awful passes. I've never seen three worse passes in a row. I mean, Matt McGloin, he's a backup for a reason, right?
That's saying a lot considering how many quarterbacks we've had run through here in the last 14 years. But that performance was up there with the worst of them. It was up there.
Connor Cook came into the game and definitely looked better than that. And I think part of it might have to do with the fact that Connor Cook actually has started a football game. You know, he started a football game last year. I can't remember the last time Matt McGloin started a football game. So really, if you think about it, you know, his layoff has been shorter. But talk about what you guys saw from Connor Cook and how would you grade his performance, you know, for being a third string quarterback who's just tossed in to a game against one of the toughest defenses in the league.
I think the biggest thing with Connor Cook for me, and Dylan just alluded to it, you know, third string quarterback, Matt McGloin wasn't getting any practice reps, you know, in the offseason. So Connor Cook definitely wasn't getting any practice reps. I know Donald Penn came out and said, you know, the week leading up to the game, that was the first time you heard him talk all year long, which I guess says it all right there.
Wow.
But I guess for me, for Cook, for that being his very first action is, you know what I mean, a game, you know, a live game, everything's moving a lot faster, and he comes out and looks, you know, relatively poised. I mean, that's a pretty cool sight to him. So I guess, you know, hats off to Cook and the way he prepares, you know, mentally and kind of gets himself ready. So hopefully a sign of things to come.
I was pleasantly surprised by Cook. I mean, I have to admit it, and that's coming from someone that is definitely quite the Connor Cook detractor. I mean, all throughout draft season, just kind of going through, you know, all the college football scouting and all that stuff, Connor Cook is a quarterback I was very, very low on for both on and off the field reasons. I mean, I thought he was quite erratic. I really didn't like his chances of success at the next level. And then there was all the stuff about his personality. I mean, just to put it simply, a lot of former players, a lot of media people pretty much alluded to the fact that the guy might be kind of a D-bag. And he was just someone that I didn't even think the Raiders would consider drafting. And then Reggie McKenzie trades up in the fourth round to draft him. So I, like I said, coming from someone that's been quite a Cook detractor before he was even on the team, I was pleasantly surprised by his performance. Thought he did a lot of good things. He made several pretty impressive throws. As Ryan said, he looked poised, which I thought was maybe the biggest thing that surprised me is, you know, to get thrown into the fire the first time that you even played in the regular season in such a meaningful game with your team trailing, with Carr getting hurt, then McGloin getting hurt. I mean, that's a lot of pressure to deal with just to come in there, and I thought he handled it pretty well. So as far as maybe grading his performance, I would say maybe a C+, because I think the one pretty bad thing is just his penchant for turnovers seems worrisome. I mean, he had one fumble that was lost. He had another fumble that the Raiders luckily recovered. He had an interception, and then he had a second throw that probably should have been picked off. And those are major mistakes that could cost the team in the playoffs if they continue. But a lot of things going forward, and I'm actually much more confident in him being the backup quarterback next season than I was before the game started.
You know, I actually had a chance to see Connor Cook play last season in East Lansing. I was in Michigan, and I was pleasantly surprised. I was actually I liked that draft. You know, I liked that the Raiders selected him. It was obviously you know, to cut in line and kind of bone Dallas, but Dallas lucked out. So you know, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised by how poised he looked. But before we switch over to, you know, the playoff game against Houston, let's spend a little time talking about how the defense performed against Denver. Ryan, Was this the last straw for the secondary as far as you're concerned? Like, is it time to rehaul this whole group? Like, maybe outside of Carl Joseph? I feel like we have this conversation every season and every week, basically. But are we done with the secondary?
Yeah, for me, man, again, said it last week, just like you alluded to, the week prior to that, probably the week prior to that, and all the weeks prior to that. You know, it's return on investment for me. Again, probably where expectations lied, especially for a player like Sean Smith. And I know, you know, we had James on last week, who I thought brought up a really good point as far as, you know, he's being asked to drop further back. He's not allowed to press in the line, which is what he is. He's a big body, physical type. So you kind of question that, throw it, you know, chalk it up to scheme and his viability there. But, you know, that aside, there was a stat that was tweeted out earlier this week that Sean Smith has given up 999 yards this season. So there comes to a point where you stop blaming it all on scheme and you realize, okay, you watch him play. He can't run. And he's just inconsistent. So is he a bad player? No, but is he the player that we thought we were going to get? Probably not, at least not for me. Emerson, again, I talk about all the time. He got paid. Kudos to Reggie for trying to lock up talent and stuff like that in-house. Probably not living up to that money either. So again, I'd be a little disappointed if McKenzie didn't go out and try to maybe sign a cornerback in free agency or two, or looking towards the draft, if he didn't try to come away with at least a cornerback or two in the first four or five rounds or so.
For myself with the secondary, I mean, Sean Smith has been bad, but I definitely am. I'm definitely in the group that thinks that he's really just completely being misused, because in the times where he is used as he's supposed to be used, as like a press cover corner, and when he's not asked to match up on guys like Travis Benjamin or Tyreek Hill, those types of receivers, I mean, he really doesn't get cooked in. He doesn't really get cooked in those types of situations. I mean, every single time that we see this guy giving up plays, it's because he's playing 6-7 yards off of the wide receiver, or he's probably covering someone that he shouldn't be covering as far as a matchup goes. So I don't really think we need a rehaul of the secondary. I think the talent is there. I'm definitely in the boat of Reggie Nelson, I think, being a pretty low-quality player. He's kind of got that knack for turnovers, but that's about it. But, I mean, I'd be okay with Sean Smith and David Amerson coming back. It's just a matter of, I think, them not being used properly. Because even in spite of some of Ken Norton Jr.'s deficiencies in regard to the secondary, they've really improved largely since the first half of the season. I mean, the secondary was, for maybe the first half of the season, dead last in yards allowed, and they've really turned the corner, and they're actually, as a group, up to 24th. I mean, obviously still not great, but they've made some strides when they're used properly. So, like I said, I don't think we need a complete rehaul. I'd be very curious to see, first and foremost, what happens with Ken Norton Jr. I think if we can get a coordinator in here that understands what Sean Smith is and uses him like that, then, you know, perhaps his... you know, we can get that return on value. So, you know, I don't want to be too critical of the play on the field, you know, for that reason.
Now, through two games, Mario Edwards Jr. has been on a limited snap count. He hasn't really made much of an impact. Nick, is this a disappointment to you, or should the fan base, should they have, like, tempered expectations to begin with?
I think it's a little bit of a disappointment, just because you want to see a player of his caliber, based on what we saw in his rookie season. You want to see him come in and make at least some sort of impact, whereas these first two games, he's been mostly invisible. There was a couple of plays where he pushed the pocket and made an impact in that regard, but he clearly, as of right now, still doesn't have some of the leg drive, some of his strength back, some of his conditioning back to really make an impact. Especially in the second half, I ran the game back and noticed that in the second half, he definitely just kind of seemed tired and out of breath, and I think that's just a football-shaped thing, and that's going to take some time. So, you know, all things considered, you know, maybe a little bit of a disappointment, but not too much, just because expectations should have been tempered. I mean, if anyone coming in thinking that he's going to play week one and pick up like right where he left off, I think was really just foolish and expecting too much.
I'm going to go ahead and echo everything that Nick said, pretty much. You know, nothing really too too crazy or poignant to add. Other than, I mean, I know for me coming in, obviously the lead up to, you know, his return, the fan base was obviously very hopeful. Because again, Edwards, when healthy, is a very talented player. I'd probably go as far to say he's absolutely a difference maker on the field. But again, coming in, I know we discussed it on earlier pods in the season. I know I had question marks about his health and how he's going to hold up. So to miss that much football for and you know, and to just jump right back into it as Nick alluded to, you're obviously going to have to, you know, dust off the cobwebs and kind of find your way, you know, back on the field to the level that he was playing at. So just a bit, I'm not gonna say learning curve, but just, you know, kind of getting back into it. So maybe we'll see a player that's ready and elevating his play once more this week against Houston.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders need to have Mario Edwards Jr. get his legs back immediately, because for the last 2 weeks they haven't recorded a sack. How much of a concern is that headed into the playoffs next weekend, or this weekend I should say?
Yeah, I mean, again, with Carr sidelined, I think the kind of the narrative and the storyline coming into, you know, last week and obviously looking ahead to the playoff game, the storyline was, you know, the defense needs to, you know, quote unquote, step up. They got to put the team on their back. And that obviously, you know, you're obviously talking about guys like Khalil Mack, Bruce Irvin, and hopefully a healthy and effective, you know, Mario Edwards. So for me, definitely a concern. Because it's really now or never, literally. And this team needs the defense now more than ever.
Yeah, it's definitely for me now at this point a concern, the lack of production from the pass rush, just because of what's at stake. I think with Derek Carr at the helm, you know, with the comeback victories, you know, maybe they get a little bit of a pass, but with Matt McGloin first in there and now Connor Cook in the call, I mean, the defense and the team in general really need this pass rush to step up in order to win this upcoming game here in Houston. And when we saw against Indianapolis and we saw against Denver, those are two weak offensive lines. So to not get a sack in either of those games, you know, maybe just one you can kind of consider a one-off, but two times in a row, you know, a little bit of a concern, because now you've kind of got this pattern developing of, you know, where did the pass rush go? Because before that, what was it? It was like 10 sacks in four games or something along those lines. They really started clicking, and now all of a sudden they've disappeared. So, you know, hopefully in this rematch against Houston, you know, we can have them get back on track, because, you know, they, you know, we definitely need it if the Raiders are going to somehow advance to the next round.
Obviously, most of the talk about the Denver game has been negative. So let's try to switch that up. Were there any bright spots on Sunday?
Maybe a couple at best. I mean, it was rough. I mean, if you get beat 24-6, there's really not many positives to speak of. I would say the play that Amari Cooper had, that touchdown he had, that was really impressive for him to make that catch and tiptoe on the sideline, take a hit, and reach for the pylon. I mean, that one play was pretty impressive. Malcolm Smith, I thought, had another really game. I mean, we talked about him last week. I had mentioned that he was directly responsible for two turnovers in the Indianapolis game. And then coming out against Denver, I think he followed it up with a quality performance in run support and in coverage. And then Brendan Trawick, I think, was a nice little surprise in his first defensive snaps of the season. It came in week 17 when we already had Carl Joseph hurt. Nate Allen got hurt. He's in concussion protocol. McGill, not a good football player, and Trawick gets the call. He had 10 tackles and an interception, and I thought he looked pretty good out there. Surprising considering he probably has had very, very little reps as actual safety all season long. So that was good to see. And then I think Marquette King probably has to be the last one. I mean, he punted eight times, which is ridiculous. You never want your punter to have to punt eight times, but he had almost a 60-yard average, I think, which is just ridiculous. He was really booming punts up in Mile High. But yeah, not too many positives overall.
Now it's all but confirmed that Connor Cook is set to start the game against Houston this weekend, because of Matt McGloin's shoulder injury. Now, let's say hypothetically for a second that Matt McGloin was healthy. Would you still go with Connor Cook?
For me, man, I mean, absolutely. I mean, if I was sitting down, if I was Del Rio, man, and I was sitting down looking at tape from last week, and I just saw the series like we talked about earlier where he aired it out high three times in a row, man, and missed a wide open Cooper, I would have turned everybody and said, obviously Cook starting. So again, even if McGloin finished healthy and maybe he turned around, maybe he didn't, but, I mean, you saw the way he came out, man. It was sad. So for me, close that chapter, moving on, see what Cook's got for you.
Now, obviously expectations for Connor Cook this weekend can't be the highest, but what would you guys like to see out of him? Like, what do you want to see Connor Cook do this weekend to ensure that the Oakland Raiders are successful?
I think the game plan's got to be similar to what it was, you know, with McGloin coming into the game. You gotta rely on your run game. Talked about earlier, they didn't do that last week, so hopefully that changes. But specifically from Connor Cook, just want to see him, you know, continue to play poised and just try to limit turnovers. You know, it sounds simple, it sounds cliche, but you're obviously not expecting him to, you know, air it out deep or, you know, put the team, you know, on his back or win with his arm, whatever the case may be. So just play smart, control the football, and hopefully just hand it off every play, every other play.
I just want to see no turnovers. I mean, that's really about it. As simple as that. I think Connor showed in the Denver game here that he can make some throws. You know, given the opportunity, it's just the turnovers seem like quite the concern. Like I said, with the one lost fumble, the one other fumble that the Raiders recovered, the interception, and then the pass that Tully probably should have picked off. Those are four plays that would, you know, completely flip a game upside down if they were to, you know, repeat themselves. So number one, I mean, that's really the only thing I really care to see is just please do not turn over the football in a game where the Raiders are going to have to need as any points they can get in order to win the game, because, you know, neither team might not even make it to 20 points. You know, any differential in the turnover battle that is positive or negative is really going to make the difference in the game.
How do you think Musgrave should call this game this weekend?
I think it should be kind of the opposite of what the narrative has been. For example, what it was with the Denver game. And here's why. And again, what that is pretty much everyone said it going into the Denver game, establish the run, run the ball 30, 35 times, and really get that going. But just like Denver knew that is exactly what was going to happen, and they were loading the box with eight, sometimes nine guys in the box, Houston is going to do that same thing. They're going to put eight guys in the box. They're going to put nine guys in the box sometimes, and they're going to do every single thing they can to stop the run. And if Musgrave chooses to run the ball 25, 30 times, facing that type of front and this kind of defense with some of the players they have on their end, I think the run game is going to perform exactly how they did against Denver. So what I would like to see Musgrave do, just to kind of counter that, I'd be really curious to see, you know, what he would do if he goes empty, just goes five wide. They come out here with an eight-man front or nine in the box, and then the Raiders come out five wide in shotgun. And then the Texans are either going to have to burn a timeout, or they're going to have to call a little bit of an audible, and you're going to have linebackers lined up on wide receivers, and you're going to have mismatches. So I want to see Musgrave just counter that with a little creativity. You know, don't just, if they're sending the nine men in the box, don't go out there and call a run up the middle, because you're not going to do anything. You know, let's go four wide. Let's spread the field out a little bit, spread out the defense. And then if we can get a little bit of success in the pass game, then I think we can start to pound the rock once the Texans aren't, you know, using these eight, nine guys in the box anymore. So I would like to see the opposite. Let's establish the pass game. I mean, the Texans are going to give the Raiders passing opportunities. They're going to give them under routes, slant routes, quick routes, all that stuff. They're going to give it up and be content to do so. So take advantage of that from the beginning. And then once you have some opportunity, then start to establish the run after that. So I want to see happen in reverse this week.
To be honest, I've never seen a throw that Connor Cook hasn't tried to make, you know, for better or for worse. So I think that strategy actually works. You know, I think that Connor Cook wants to throw the ball. So we'll see how it goes. But have we seen the last of McGloin as a Raider?
Yeah, I mean, dude, it's, again, I think it was his future to kind of write. with this game in the shoulder, you know, and the game on his shoulder. So just came out flat again. Unfortunately, got hurt. But yeah, I don't see why McKenzie would go out of his way to kind of keep him around. Again, they got Cook, who's already shown perhaps more promise than Matt McGloin, and I imagine they'll end up, you know, adding a veteran this offseason or even perhaps drafting someone else again. So for me, no reason for Matty McGloin, Moxie McGloin, to hang around in the East Bay anymore.
I think that not only have we seen Matt McGloin's last game as a Raider, but I think he threw his opportunity to be a starter away in the offseason. I mean, he was going to be an unrestricted free agent headed into the offseason. And I think with the quality performance here in week 17, and if he would have been able to repeat up that performance in the playoffs with another quality showing, there would have been a bad football team out there that would have given him a starter contract. I'm very confident in that. I mean, there's some teams out there, some really dysfunctional team. I mean, the team on the other side of the bay, I think, probably would have signed Matt McGloin to a nice little contract had he had a big day, or not even a big day, just a quality performance. So yeah, I think not only is he done as a Raider, but I think he also threw his opportunity to be a starter somewhere out the window.
I think that we're all in agreement that the run game has to be successful in order to help Cook out. What do you expect from Murray, Richard, and Washington against this Houston front seven?
Yeah, I think this Houston team it isn't as good as a defensive unit as Denver, who's arguably the best or one of the best in the league. But I think Houston's built, in a similar mold. So they're going to come out with the same game plan. You know, Nick kind of alluded to it before, as frustrating as it's going to be for fans. Teams now see, obviously, with no Carr, they're going to make whoever's under center, whether it's Cook or McGloin, they're going to make them beat him with their arm, load the box. So, again, it's going to be a tough run for guys like Murray and the two rookie backs. But in order to get Cook, you know, going and help, you know, bail him out in a sense, you gotta kind of force the issue and pound and keep pounding.
So in addition to Houston's stout front seven, they also have a talented secondary. Cook is probably going to need his wide receivers to step up. Who do you think has a bigger game, Cooper or Crabtree?
I mean, I think we heard, again, Cooper's post-practice or previous to practice comments today or yesterday, whenever it was. He wants the ball, man. Cooper wants the ball. He wants to be the guy. He wants to eat and kind of, you know, help, you know, close that gap, so to speak. So for me, I'm looking at Amari Cooper, not only because he's been a little more vocal about it, perhaps. Again, I just think he's obviously just the better receiver, too. So maybe this is the week where he, kind of breaks the subpar streak that he's been on.
I'm going to go with Crabtree. I think he's going to have the bigger game. Cooper, but 7 out of 8 games now, he's had less than 60 receiving yards or maybe even less than 50. So it's been quite a long rough patch at this point. Even when Derek was healthy, that rough patch was kind of continuing. So, you know, all of a sudden with Connor Cook in the helm, I don't expect that to change. Whereas Crabtree, I think he acts more as a failsafe, not only for Derek Carr. I think that's going to continue with Connor Cook at the helm. I think Crabtree's going to be that kind of go-to guy on 3rd and 6 if you need to move the chains. I think he's going to look to Crab direction as opposed to Cooper's, and maybe even the red zone. I mean, Connor Cook's seen games. He's been watching. He knows what Crabtree's been doing with some of these fade routes and some of these touchdowns that he's put together as a red zone target. So I expect Crabtree actually to be a little bit more heavily leaned on than Cooper.
Well, on the other side of the ball, Houston Texans just announced that Brock Osweiler will be starting instead of Tom Savage. Is this a good thing for the Oakland Raiders?
Actually, I do think it is a good thing to have the starter back as opposed to the backup, just because, I mean, we know the deal with Brock. Good beer pong player, bad football player is basically exactly is how to sum him up. So he's more turnover prone from both a interception and a fumble ball security standpoint. And I think he's, even though he's what, he's 6'7". You know, as we know, his arm isn't that good. He doesn't have the arm of a 6'7" quarterback. So I for one, am quite happy that it's going to be Brock as the starter, because he gives the Raiders the best chance to win.
Yeah, I got nothing really additional to add to that. You know, both these quarterbacks aren't very good. So, I think it's a better matchup. You know, we talked about it last week, you know, matching up against Houston versus, you know, another team. So hopefully it kind of gives the defense a push that it may need at this point.
So no debut from Glock Osweiler, as Houston is dubbing him.
Is that what they're calling him these days?
Yeah, the Glock. Oh, anyway, Lamar Miller had 24 carries for 104 yards and a touchdown in the Mexico City game. Are you guys expecting more of the same performance from Lamar?
Yeah, I mean, I think Lamar's been, you know, for the past couple seasons, he's kind of been that guy. Everyone's been talked about, you know, wherever he's been, hasn't been getting the work that he's really, you know, deserved. It was kind of more the same in Houston, you know. But again, I think he's a really good running back. So again, I would expect nothing less than, you know, kind of what he did in Mexico City. So, you know, again, comes back to the defense. Hopefully they're up to, you know, stop the run and amongst other concerns.
I think it's going to be a bigger day for Lamar than it was the first time around. Did you say, Dylan, I think you said, or if you didn't, but it was 24 carries for 104 yards and a touchdown the first time.
Yep.
Yeah, these two teams met. So I expect actually an even bigger game because Osweiler has been pulled and now he's back. I don't see them relying on Osweiler's arm all that much, which means that I think they will be relying on the run game even more so than they did the first time around. And this is a game whereas the Texans were leading from into the fourth quarter with Derek Carr at the helm. I think that means that they probably have a pretty good chance to be leading once again this time around. And, you know, if they got the lead, they're going to look to run the clock out, get that run game going. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Lamar with close to 30 carries. And if he gets that many, I mean, it's going to be tough to hold him to lower production than he had the first time around. So, you know, not to be too pessimistic about it. I hate to do that, but it's like I said, he's a talented back. This defense seems to be struggling to hold it together right now. So I think it's going to be a long day of them watching Lamar run, you know, kind of do as he wants.
Now, in the first game that I have dubbed Sicario Part 2, Fedorowicz and Hopkins combined for 11 catches for 140 yards. How should the defense approach these two knuckleheads this time around?
So in this one, I don't know if there's really much that this defense is going to do differently or that they should do differently. I mean, yeah, they combined for 11 catches for 140 yards together. Separately, though, I don't think it was necessarily that big of a game for either, particularly Hopkins. And three or four of his catches in the first game came against DJ Hayden, who he just really made look silly. So this time around, you know, if he can get matched up on Amerson or if Sean Smith can be used properly, I don't see him having a bigger game than he did the first time around, especially with what I was just talking about with I don't think they'll be relying on Osweiler's arm as much as they did the first time around. So, in fact, it might even be a quieter game for Hopkins than it was in the first game. Fedorowicz, you know, we've got this tight end problem that surfaced again this season, but I don't think he's going to be wrecking shop necessarily. I mean, he might get four or five catches, 60, 70 yards, but I don't think it's going to be damage that's going to, you know, be the end of this defense or that's going to, you know, allow them to surrender 30 points or anything like that. So just try to limit the big plays is I think really all it is. They're going to give up, you know, chunks of yards here on these underneath routes, but just don't get burned for a long touchdown. And I think the defense will be, I think, okay.
Yeah, I think the news that I've been reading today was that Carl Joseph's gonna push to start and play, obviously with Nate Allen in concussion protocol. So he may or may not help us with our tight end problem again. Carl's been outstanding, you know, closer to the line of scrimmage and a fantastic tackler. Still kind of working his way through some coverage issues. So we'll see how his presence balances things out. And as for Nuck, man, he's still Nuk. Obviously, the quarterback play is probably going to hamstring a little bit, as Nick alluded to. But for the Raiders, there's no DJ Hayden on the field, which probably helps out in this case. So I guess, you know, right around what they did last time, you know, probably sounds about right for me. Maybe Carl kind of helps out with the tight end situation a little bit.
Jadeveon Clowney was a problem in their first matchup. With Menelik now starting at right tackle instead of Austin Howard, will things be different this time around?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think a lot of us, you know, especially towards, you know, the end of the season, we're more or less pulling for Menelik Watson again. Raiders analysis point, Teddy said, you know, Austin's a fine tackle, serviceable on most teams, but just cannot, you know, find his way around the AFC West. Again, Clowney's not an AFC West opponent, but he's a really good pass rusher. So, you know, I guess we'll have to kind of wait and see. Hopefully Menelik can stay healthy for the entire game and kind of put up a fight. So again, I know Clowney had a pretty unreal performance versus the Raiders the first time. So maybe he's just kind of got a thing against Oakland, and maybe he pops off again, or maybe Menelik, you know, shows up and ends up, you know, stonewalling him for the most part. So it's going to be a very interesting matchup.
I think Clowney probably is going to be in line for another big game. Even though Menelik has been clearly better than Austin Howard pretty much any time he's stepped on the field this season, it's just a matter of Clowney's athleticism, I think, more than anything else. Menelik will probably be able to hold his own in some regard, but Clowney's just going to be too big and too fast to not be disruptive. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw him, you know, making plays once again, especially with Wade Phillips back there. I mean, he's going to be able to put this game plan together to probably limit what Connor Cook can do in the run game, and Clowney's going to be a big factor in that. So. So wouldn't be surprised at all if Clowney had just as big of a game as he had the first time around.
AJ Boye had an interception in their first meeting, and I know he's Ryan's favorite dude. Ryan's been preaching about him all season, basically. You've got him. You've been eyeing him as a potential Raiders acquisition in the offseason. Is it best to avoid targeting him altogether on Saturday, even if he's covering Cooper?
I mean, I think it's going to be a really interesting matchup. AJ Boye is playing some unbelievable football. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, obviously Texans break the bank for him or get real close to doing so. I'd be surprised if he hits the free agent market. Someone as young as he is and able to cover the way he covers, obviously those kind of cornerbacks are highly sought after. But again, I think this weekend is going to be potentially the Amari Cooper game. I'm kind of pushing all my chips in the middle of the table as far as Amari Cooper goes. He's been vocal, which is the first time I think I've ever heard him really speak out and kind of ask the ball or kind of tell the reporters what he wants and how he wants to go about his business. So I'm putting a lot of faith into Amari Cooper, even though knowing that, you know, AJ has been playing some unbelievable, you know, cover lockdown type cornerback play. So it's going to be a really, really good matchup.
All right. Let's talk keys to the game. What is the number one thing that the Raiders have to do, absolutely have to do, on Saturday in order to win this game? Nick, you go first.
I am going with the cop-out most obvious answer here, I think so at least. It's completely on Connor Cook's shoulders. Like I said, we saw in the Denver game, we can try to rely on the run game all we want, but the other team knows that, so it's unfortunately not going to be that simple. So the ball is going to be placed squarely in the court of Connor Cook. So let's say if we can put up 250 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions, something like that, I'd actually think the Raiders win this game and move on to the next round.
Yeah, for me, I guess I'll go the other direction. And we kind of chatted about it a little bit early on in the episode. For me, I'm going to put it all on the defense. Khalil Mack, 52, has to take over. Hopefully Bruce Irvin, you know, kind of shows out the way he's been doing the past, you know, few football games to kind of close out the season. Really need 51 and 52 to kind of force turnovers and really rattle whoever's under center for the Texans, whether it's Osweiler, or whatever the case may be. And hopefully, you know, Reggie Nelson comes up with one of those timely interceptions. Again, it's just kind of force turnovers and then hopefully get points off turnovers, whether, you know, even if it's only just, you know, settling for a field goal.
who were the X factors in this game? Give me one for each team. Ryan, you start.
I'm going to stick with my kind of defensive theme here. I'm going to go again 52 for the Raiders on defense. Khalil's got to absolutely take over. And on offense, I'm going to go with one of the running backs. You know, it could be another big Jalen Richard, you know, breakout type party. So I would like to see him kind of, you know, kind of catch the ball and kind of get loose out of the backfield. As far as the Texans, I'll probably, you know, probably pick on AJ Boye again. Gonna see what he's able to do against, you know, a wideout like Amari Cooper. And on offense, put the spotlight back on Lamar Miller, who could be in line for another big game and could possibly put it away early for Houston.
I think we all know, you know, obviously the one X factor for the Raiders is Connor Cook. I mean, that goes without saying. So to maybe take it a little bit of a different direction for the Raiders, I'm curious to see what kind of performance Clive Wofford is going to have. Just maybe operating if Crabtree is going to be fail-safe option number one, you know, maybe Wofford is going to be that fail-safe option number two on some of these short routes, using him up the seam on, you know, maybe little curl patterns and whatnot. And on the defensive side for the Raiders, Khalil Mack is one that Ryan pointed out. You know, obviously he can single-handedly take over a game. We've seen him do that several times. So they definitely are going to need him to do that here once again. But just to throw another name out there, even though, you know, we already talked about how Mario Edwards Jr. should have fan base expectations tempered a little bit, it's do or die time, win or go home. And I think he's going to have to really get up to speed here quickly, push that pocket, because if he doesn't, then Osweiler's going to step up. And Irvin and Mac aren't going to be able to get around the edge for a sack. So Mario, I think, really has to get it going this week. For Houston, probably Lamar Miller. I mean, he's the easy choice. But if the Texans have a lead, he's going to be leaned on heavily. I said earlier, I think he could have close to 30 carries. And if he does, and if he has a big day, then this game's going to get out of hand, I think, pretty quickly. And for defense, I mean, they have several guys, really, that stand out. Boye, Kareem Jackson, Clowney. Hard to pick just one, but I want to see Clowney versus Metelik is what I'm most anxious to see, since we didn't get to see that the first time around. So I'll go with Jay Davion for their defensive key.
Before we get to the prediction time, it's your last chance to apply the famous Just Blog Baby hex. What do you guys got?
I don't know. It's I feel like we've lost some of the mojo just because of what happened with Derek. I mean, we were talking about for weeks how we've had to kind of change our mindset from a, you know, what can go wrong, you know, is this season too good to be true kind of mentality, and then that's exactly what ended up happening. It all came crashing down. But, you know, outside of that, I think we've held strong. I think T.Y. Hilton just kind of bent the curse, but I don't think he broke it. So I'm going to go ahead and apply the curse to Lamar Miller. I think he gets to 30 carries, 130 yards, two scores, has a big day, and I think he allows the Texans to get the game out of hand. So Ryan, what do you think? You with me on Lamar Miller?
Man, I'm kind of with you on like the state of depression, bro. Like I mean, we were having so much fun with the hex, man, and then I don't know, one fibula kind of turned it all the opposite direction. It could be a really, really big game for Lamar Miller. That's how things are kind of stacking up, and he might even trot out there and kick a field goal.
All right, give me your predictions.
I'm going to go ahead and edit the Sarah McLaughlin music in the background here for when I get my prediction, because I don't think it's going to be a good one. I hate to be pessimistic here, but I mean, just got to give my honest thoughts. You know, we saw what this team looks like without Derek Carr, and it's a 6-point performance. Connor Cook, you know, even though he flashed and looked decent, the energy was just really down across the board for the whole entire team, offense and defense. And I don't really think that's going to change too much, unfortunately. I mean, I would love to say that I think the group is going to come out fired up, chip on their shoulder, we can win this, playoffs, rah-rah kind of thing. But, you know, if they get down in a 7-0 deficit, and I said this on the last podcast, the thing I was most interested to see was what kind of energy the team is going to have if they find themselves facing a deficit, if they're going to rally back, and they didn't. They completely caved in. So, you know, if that happens once again, I definitely am worried that it's going to go south once again. So I'm going to go with a 24-13 loss. The Texans move on, and we once again go fishing.
Man, that shit, that shit's some real depressing talk, man. But I'm right with Nick, bro. It's gonna be an ugly loss again. I think again going back to Derek Carr and the drop off and all that. Man, I'm gonna go Texans. Let's see here, Texans 17, the Raiders 9. Sebastian grabs 3 field goals, and I probably throw up before the third quarter and probably do some laundry or something like that.
Yeah, my really only prediction is going to be that I'm going to be just crying after the game, eating bonbons on the couch, listening to some Nickelback. That is the the only prediction. I think that's going to be completely accurate after the game.
You know, I think we're going to hit the trifecta here because I don't have Oakland winning either, but I don't think it's going to be a low score of 17-9. I think Oakland gets blown out, man. I think they I don't see it happening. I think Connor Cook's going to be just in over his head. He's going to have a rough day, and Houston's just going to be all over Oakland. So I'll say 28-10 Houston.
Woof. You know what, fellas? We used to be such a lively bunch. We were a fun group once upon a time. We were having a good time on the podcast. We were laughing. We had guests on here. Everything was all on well. The Raiders were 11-3, and times were good, you know? And look at us now. We are a sad, miserable group. It's rough though, and hopefully we can do one more podcast after this one if the Raiders can pull out a victory, and we can somehow do another preview podcast as opposed to jumping into some of the offseason stuff. But man, I don't know. It's going to be an uphill battle.
How funny is it that the Oakland Raiders are 12-4 and we sound like we just had to bury our pet dog? You know what I mean? Like, we're so depressed, but no one saw this at the beginning of the season. No one saw this in the offseason. You know, I think I had the Raiders going 9-7, maybe 10-6. And, you know, just listening to Raiders fans, you would think that
we were 4-12.
Yeah. You know, you'd think that we were 2-14, and it's just funny. It's funny how that works out.
Yeah. And it is. And it does feel like that. And in this case, I really don't even think it's a matter of like an entitled fan base that feels like 12-4 is a disappointment, because it's not. I mean, this has been pretty much of my lifetime that I can remember the best Oakland Raiders football season that there's been. So I just kind of want to make that very clear that the season has been absolutely fantastic and complete success for 99% of it. It's just that, you know, bad luck happens sometimes. I mean, football is a cruel sport. The football gods are cruel. And, you know, it hasn't broken our way for these last couple of weeks. And I probably shouldn't say broken. My apologies there. But it's tough to have to go through this. It was just ripped away from us in the fashion that it was is kind of what makes it so unfortunate. But, you know, actually one other thing I wanted to say before we wrap up here, I mean, how strong is Derek Carr's MVP case? I mean, we saw him for 15 games put together top notch MVP level play and establish himself as a top candidate. And we probably saw in one game without Derek Carr compared to the 15 games with him, just that one game without him might even prove how valuable he is more than that the other 15 games did. You know, I'll be curious to see at the end of the season how many first place MVP votes that this man gets. Because he might not get it this year, but I said on a previous podcast, you could take it to the bank. He's locking up that MVP award in 2017.
Nah, man, I'm over here depressed and I just want to go to bed, man. It's just this has been an emotional roller coaster, boys. It's sad, and I guess we all got 2017. So
all right, well, the season's not over yet, but this podcast is, so that'll do it for this episode of the Just Blog Baby podcast. You can follow us along on Twitter at Just Blog Baby. Go ahead and subscribe to our iTunes account, Spotify, SoundCloud.
Not Spotify.
I do that every week.
Every single week.
Not Spotify, but all the other ones. And go ahead and shoot us good ratings. You fellas have anything else to add?
Man, I bet our podcast ratings, just like the Oakland Raiders season, is tanking. Based on these last couple episodes, the last two in particular, just because of I feel like how depressing it's been.
I know, man. I'm trying to liven it up, but you know, we'll see you folks next week.
Peace.